my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1, 2, 3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
King of the Ring, Stone Cold Steve Austin, an incredible victory.
The first thing I want to be done is to get that piece of crap out of my ring. Don't just get him out of the ring, get him out of the WWF. Because I've proved, son, without a shadow of a doubt, you ain't got what it takes anymore. You sit there and you thump your Bible and you say your prayers and it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass.
Come on, that's not necessary.
All he's got to do is go buy him a cheap bottle of Thunderbird and try to dig back some of that courage he had in his prime. As the king of the ring, I'm serving notice to every one of the WWF superstars. I don't give a damn what they are. They're all on the list, and that's Stone Cold's list, and I'm fixing to start running through all of them. As far as this championship match is considered, son, I don't give a damn if it's Davey Boy Smith or Shawn Michaels. Steve Austin's time has come. And when I get the shot, you're looking at the next WWF champion. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Obviously, anything but humble, the fourth prestigious King of the Ring, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Everyone, welcome to episode 316. Episode 316, as Stone Cold Steve Austin would say. And in honor of that, my guest today, Tyler Heath Hatton of Stride Pro Wrestling. We're going to talk a little bit about Stone Cold Steve Austin. I did a whole episode on Stone Cold back on 316 on March 16th. So I did figure, though, since it is episode 316, we should throw in a little Austin talk. But before we do that, Tyler, welcome back to the show. How are things going?
They are going well. They are going about as good as can possibly go, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, and we obviously we always try to update fans, because a lot of the Stride fans do listen to the episodes where you are the co-host on here. So I guess right now there's really not much of an update in terms of Stride Pro Wrestling and being in action. There was supposed to be a show over the weekend, but obviously that had to change. Do you have any updates, or you're still doing the training school? How are things going?
We are still doing the training school. We're doing it because, you know, there's less than 10 people, and we're doing it the best that we can. As far as, you know, shows, I'll be pretty frank. It doesn't look good. I know we're going to keep the building through January. If something drastic doesn't happen, I don't see us, I'm not saying Stride is done. I think we will be able to bounce back, find another building. However, I am anticipating that come January that, we lose that building until COVID passes, and then we can find something else.
Sure. Well, obviously without a place to call home, a building of sorts, it's hard to do the training that generates money. And because we can't do shows in front of live crowds again, you can't make money that way either. And that's really how the wrestling business kind of works is you perform and people come and pay to see that performance. So it's definitely, you know, and we talked about this several months ago with WWE Impact and AEW, as far as like having those live crowds. And there have been reports that WWE may not go back to that house show formula, and AEW never really did that anyway. They were performing obviously in front of crowds for their TV tapings, but beyond that, you know, so do you think on the other side of COVID, obviously indie companies are being very much affected and impacted, but do you think that the big guys will also see permanent changes to their business plans?
I've always heard that, you know, the WWE and the ratings on TV and the house shows and the, I'm a firm believer, and I could be wrong. I don't have any inside information, but I think since the WWE Network has launched, and you look at, I mean, gosh, there is HBO Max, there's Netflix, there's Disney Plus, you know, there's Hulu, there's all these streaming services, and WWE always seems to be ahead of the buck on that stuff, or at least up, you know, mm-hmm. to par with it. And I'm just a firm believer in WWE does not care about TV ratings as much as they do their streaming service,
yeah.
Getting their numbers up on it. And, you know, I mean, gosh, there's, you know, they did that call on it and there was 1.6 million subscribers. I mean, I'm not amazing at math, but that's a lot a month that they are making. And, you know, and so you look, and I think it was Raw had a 1.8 rating or a 1.9. So, you know, I guess that's one, you know, equal to about 1.8 million people. I mean, WWE has about as many as that watching the network as they do on, you know, watching their TV program. And so, you know, I think WWE has transitioned the model. You know, like for me, I know a lot of people that are frustrated with The Mandalorian because they have to wait each week to watch it.
Mm.
So I think we've talked about this before, that it's a, you know, the average person doesn't watch a video more than a minute.
Yeah.
The average, you know, so we're, and most people like to binge watch their shows, you know, and so I think that that's kind of the way WWE's going in a way. And I don't see them, you know, benefiting from house shows anymore. I don't see that. You know, AEW, on the other hand, they are, you know, they're on TNT, and so I think they got money from TNT mm-hmm. to be successful. So again, it kind of falls into what WCW did, you know, when they, you know, they were a, they're not owned by a, you know, a TV station, but they have to keep that TV station happy.
Right.
So I just think it's two completely different ways to look at it from, you know, a business standpoint or what, you know, I've thought it for a while that WWE is transitioning, and I wouldn't be surprised if in the next year or so we don't see Raw, you know, just probably Raw being on the network and not on USA, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Interesting. That, well, you know, they did it a long time for NXT. So, as promised, though, today is episode 316, so I did want to throw a few Stone Cold questions your way. We've talked before, I think very briefly, about Stone Cold Steve Austin. I know you've always talked about guys like Edge and Triple H being some of your favorites. Where is Stone Cold on your list of favorite wrestlers?
Oh, he's a top five
yeah.
for me. Definitely a top five.
So were you a big fan of his before he jumped to WWF and was Stunning Steve Austin, or were you very familiar with him? I know that
I wasn't very familiar with him.
Yeah.
I really, honestly, I it's a blurred line, but I can barely remember him before the famous promo.
Mm.
So, and, so, I mean, I know that I knew of him, but, I barely, like he, you know, I don't know why I remember this. I had a friend, his name is Kyle Garrison, and Kyle told me, you need to watch Raw and watch Stone Cold just mess shit up. So, and I remember that was kind of like, for whatever reason, I was a WCW guy, but once he said, you got to turn on Raw and watch the Stone Cold Steve Austin guy, wreak havoc, that's when I was like, okay.
And he really did, you know, so many of those big moments during that time of the Monday Night War revolved around Steve Austin and Vince McMahon and their rivalry. And really, I think it's what turned WWF around in the ratings and brought them to the promised land, so to speak. So what was it about Austin? What is your favorite? We've got three questions to review here. What is your favorite Stone Cold Steve Austin moment or match or memory? What comes to mind when you think of Stone Cold and you like the best?
So my favorite Stone Cold moment is Backlash 99 when he won the belt against The Rock. And I don't know why that is to me, I knew wrestling was entertainment at the time, but I can remember they had Shane McMahon was the special guest ref. And I, you know, WWE always does swerves and they'll stretch things out. So I remember thinking, watching that pay-per-view, Stone Cold was going to lose. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he was going to win. And so I had convinced myself, you know, it was kind of like when, you know, to me, when Lesnar beat Undertaker, it was that shock. Like, nobody thought that was going to happen. It was the same feeling for me when Stone Cold, for whatever reason, that's always stuck out in my mind. And when Stone Cold won, I went nuts. And, because I was completely like shocked that that happened. And then also the January when Mankind won the, like that pop.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, it's hard to replace that pop. So those are my two favorite. I mean, of course you have the beer truck and all that. That was cool and neat, but as far as wrestling moments and shock, those two were my favorite.
You know, I think that Mankind pop is probably, if it's not my favorite, it's definitely up there for me. The other one that really kind of sticks out to me besides, and this happened before, or no, this happened after the promo. You know, obviously the promo was a big deal too. I remember watching that when it happened, but when the WWF was in Madison Square Garden in the fall of 97, and Vince McMahon was still, you know, the commentator on Raw. He wasn't Mr. McMahon yet, but Austin delivers the stunner to him for the first time. And now McMahon, you know, kind of botched it in the delivery of it, but that kind of started the whole, I think, started us in that direction of Austin versus McMahon, even though we didn't really get it until months later after he won the championship. But I think that the seeds being planted and just seeing how it all kind of played out and looking back on that, you know, but yeah, Austin for me also top five for sure. When we did the whole Facebook top 10 wrestlers, I had put Austin in at number four for me. So I think he's pretty amazing. And we've talked before about, you know, as far as, and I'm kind of picking your brain as someone who is inside the business of wrestling. You know, when Austin first came in, he was the ringmaster. He was with Ted DiBiase. It looked as if he was going to become kind of lost in the shuffle, so to speak. And it wasn't until allegedly the whole curtain call with Shawn Michaels and Triple H and Scott Hall and Kevin Nash that Triple H was the one that got punished for that and ended up being taken out of the King of the Ring tournament that he was supposed to win that year in 1996. they insert Steve Austin, and then, you know, he utters that that Austin 316 line because he had just wrestled Jake the Snake Roberts. So how important do you think it is? And I don't think it's, we see it as often today on the big stage because everything does seem to be so produced, but taking those chances as a wrestler, like Steve Austin did back in 96, had he not said, you know, Austin 316 in reference to Jake the Snake Roberts, we may not be having this discussion today. So how important do you think it is as a wrestler? Obviously you need to listen to bookers and promoters and producers and whatnot, but do you think there's a bit of ownership that a wrestler needs to take as well?
I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, one, their promos are scripted, but it's, I mean, I think, you know, with some guys do better with social media and being able, like CM Punk is a prime example of somebody who went against the grain. And that's why he became so popular, because he was so, you know, he was, him and Stone Cold were really the same character. They were both anti-WWE characters, except Stone Cold was on TV as a anti-WWE, anti-Vince McMahon character, while CM Punk used social media to kind of complain a little bit about it. And then finally, everybody kind of knew he was disgruntled, and he got to do that pipe bomb. And he touched on things that were behind the scenes, and he touched on ROH and Colt Cabana, and he touched on all these things that were edgy and cool. But it really had started, I started with social media, and I can remember thinking when I would look at his Twitter and be like, I can't believe they're letting him say that. I can't believe they're like, because they don't, you know, let people do that all the time. And so, you know, I think it starts with that. And I think it, you know, guys having freedom to do stuff, you know, I think they have to be willing to take a risk, number one. And then number two, you have to be willing to stay with it, because you look at like Zack Ryder, who created his show and did it himself and got real popular, but then WWE put their hands on it, and you heard him say, and then they kind of ruined it. And I'm sure that he got a payback in order to let them produce it and let them take it over. And so I think the Mighty Dollar might have, you know, came into play. But, you know, I think, yeah, I think times are different, but I think people can do it. I mean, I honestly believe if you go out and take a risk, if you go out and flip somebody off, if you go out and do something and it gets over, you think Vince McMahon is going to fire you? No, but if you go out and try and it fails and you flop, then yeah, he's probably going to fire you.
And I think, and I don't want to beat up on anybody, and I don't want to pick on anybody, but I think a lot of times on the indie scene, you know, obviously there are bookers and, you know, there are people, you know, kind of dictating the stories and telling how they want things to go. But I also kind of feel like sometimes on the indie scene, there's a lack of originality when it comes to guys emulating or, you know, imitating who they've seen, what worked in the past. You know, some companies, you know, the guy will come out to, you know, CM Punk's music or Stone Cold Steve Austin's music. And I think there's a fine line between, and I'm not, I don't want this to sound like I'm picking on the Redneck, where he did kind of a spoof of the New World Order as Redneck World. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about guys that really just kind of do too much of, you know, the promo style or whatever the case may be. So as someone who is on the indie scene, I would assume that WWE or AEW isn't looking for someone who can imitate or emulate someone who's already been through the ranks and on the roster. They want that originality. So is that hard, do you think, for guys to come up with? Because it is easier to, you know, do a super kick or do a stunner or whatever the case may be.
I think guys grew up watching wrestling and they grew up like doing those moves you talk about on their bed or on their trampoline. And so, you know, all wrestling, mostly indie wrestling fans are, or indie wrestlers are fans. So I think sometimes when they get in, they just have somebody that they've been a fan of for so long. And I think the guys that do that, they really know they're not going to make it to the big time anyway. They're just doing it because they enjoy it and they've always wanted to do it. You know, while, you know, me on the other hand, I kind of wanted to get somewhere with it. So I made sure that I tried to create my own moveset and do my own things instead of, you know, hitting a high knee and a spine buster and then a pedigree or hitting a stunner. And, you know, and so I think it really just depends on what your mentality is. Now, you do have guys that you do meet that will say, oh, I was trained by, you know, this guy, or I worked with this guy, or, you know, and then they go out and try to wrestle like them or hit their moves. And it's like, okay, first of all, we all know you weren't trained by them. Right. We all know that you're just wanting to steal their things and wear their face paint. You know, that's cool, but don't go around saying that because everybody in this building knows that that is not true.
Right. Yeah. That probably becomes a double-edged sword, I think, sometimes for guys. So last question on Stone Cold, and then we'll get to our watch along here. Who would you like to see, you know, prime Stone Cold? So, you know, 96 to 99 Stone Cold Steve Austin versus anyone from today's wrestling world, AEW, NXT, WWE, Stride, wherever the case may be. And I'm curious who you think would be a great opponent for Stone Cold Steve Austin today.
Oh, man. I mean, honestly, I kind of picked three that I thought would be good in today's market. I thought, of course, CM Punk, I think, would be good. And when I put my list together, I put them together in a, like, the way Stone Cold wrestles as a brawler.
Yeah.
The kind of the way that he can't really take moves, and the person really has to sell for him. And so you have to be able to stomp him and do things. So, you know, CM Punk's had street fights. He's done the hardcore stuff, and he has a lot of holds that he does. So I think he would be, and he can also sell and take moves. The second person was actually, I thought Dave Bautista would be somebody who I think would be really good to work him. You know, if they, I think, you know, he had a good match with Triple H. I think he would be somebody who I think in Stone Cold's prime would have been good. And the last one was Randy Orton. I kind of felt like, and then I also thought Cena, as far as money and draw, would be somebody. And Cena's so good at working with anybody, I think he would be another one that would be able to put together a good match that people would want to see. And he'd be able, and he's John Cena, so I think he'd be able to carry him through one. So,
no Matt Riddle.
I did not put your boy Riddle on there. I don't see Stone Cold selling to somebody kicking him with flip-flops. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
I agree. I was thinking, I even though I haven't seen a whole lot of him because he became injured pretty shortly after signing on, is Karrion Kross. I don't know. I think he has a lot of potential, and I'm looking forward to him coming back and seeing what else he can do. Now, you know, we kind of jokingly on Messenger talked about, is Austin someone, I mean, I know what you're going to say here, but would you have had the opportunity, would you have wanted to get in there with him?
Yeah, I mean, so when I put my list together, I looked at guys who I, you know, I thought could carry him and keep him safe, you know. But also, you know, I didn't put it as if he was in his prime. I put like if he was to come back today.
Gotcha.
But yeah, back in the day, I mean, I felt like if you got to have a match with Stone Cold, you know, yeah, you would get nothing but good out of it. I do think, and I, you know, you go back and watch a lot of Stone Cold matches in 96, 97, they were a lot 70% Stone Cold, 30% his opponent, you know, but he was so over that, you know, any, you know, cause you listen to the crowd. And so any good wrestler listens to the crowd. And so, you know, the best ones that you have or you listen to, like, you know, guys, John Cena was on, I don't really listen to it very much, but he was on Corey Graves' podcast. And any wrestler, I mean, I recommend listening to that. That is a wrestler. And so John Cena talks, and he's like, I get out there and I just listen to the crowd. And I think that's probably back then in the 90s, I'm assuming they had stuff planned out, but I bet Stone Cold listened to it. So for me as a babyface, if I got a little insider term, but if somebody's putting heat on me and I want a hope spot and I start coming back and the crowd is coming up and getting loud, I'll kind of roll with that wave for a little bit. Well, I can imagine Stone Cold back in the 90s, anytime he did anything, the crowd erupted and went bananas. So I'm sure watching him beat people up and do stuff was that crazy wave, and the crowd was louder and louder and louder, and your adrenaline's going and you roll with it. So,
yeah.
You know, no, for me, would I, yeah, I would have let him beat the crap out of me, because I can imagine, you know, gosh, I mean, we talk about some people now brag and bloat that this company had, they sold 12,000 seats, or they did this, or they did that. And it was like, okay, Stone Cold was drawing 7 million rating, you know, 7 rating, and then they had 20,000 people on a Monday night.
Right.
Sold to the rafters. You know, there's no comparison. There's just no, what Stone Cold was able to do, even against any other era, is just unheard of.
Yeah.
It literally is. You know, WCW was great, you know, 96, 97, but what Stone Cold was able to do, you know, as far as, you know, I just, you know, and that's not a knock at TNA, at AEW, at anybody, at WWE, like, it'll be hard to recreate what he was able to do. There's, you know, there's no, to me, there's no comparison to late 90s wrestling. And I think we all kind of hold on to that. You know, some of us sports fans, myself included, I don't really watch the NBA. It's not as entertaining to me as when, you know, maybe I'm still holding on to that Michael Jordan era, you know, the 90s, because it was so good. And it's hard to, you know, and not, you know, it's the same thing. You have great players now in the NBA, but it just doesn't compare to what it was. And the ratings show the same thing. It doesn't. And I think wrestling is the same way for a lot of people. It was so fun. It was so exciting. But Stone Cold was just so cool. Whether you were 8 years old or you were 50 years old, it was cool. It was entertaining. You couldn't miss it. Everybody was watching. I mean, you know, like I saw one thing that it was one Raw had a higher rating than a couple weeks ago Dancing with the Stars had, you know, so it's crazy how, you know, you think Dancing with the Stars, how popular it is. And it's a family show. More people were watching Stone Cold Steve Austin on Raw than they were watching Dancing with the Stars. So today. So it's just what he was able to do is just, it's mind blowing to me.
Yeah, definitely. Love Stone Cold Steve Austin. And so we dedicated a little time here to him today. Today we're going to also do a watch-along, and this is from Rent One Park. This is the night that Tyler and I teamed up and beat Jay Spade and Tony Flood for the Stride Pro Wrestling Tag Team Championships. It's on YouTube. It's on, and I've got the link shared on not only the Stride Pro Wrestling Facebook page, but it's also on the write-up for this week's episode of the podcast. So you can find it in a couple different places. So if you want to head to YouTube, it's Jay Spade's YouTube channel as well. Jay and his family do a good job of recording, I think, just about all of his matches, and then they upload them to his YouTube channel. So go ahead and get it loaded up, and it is from the upload date is September 1st, 2019. It's Jay Spade and Tony Flood versus Heath Hatton and Kevin Huntsberger, and we will go ahead and hit play. And talk to me a little bit about the relationship here, because this is the first time that – it's not the first time there's been wrestling at the ballpark, but this is the first time that Marion Rent One Park did a concept like this where there was baseball, there was wrestling, then there was some baseball, and then there was more wrestling. And it was an interesting concept, and I think the crowd actually stuck around and stayed for the wrestling as well.
Yeah, this was, they had reached out to me. The general manager is a huge wrestling fan, and they had actually came, believe it or not, and watched Kevin Huntsberger versus Roger Mathis in a cage, and they liked the show. They liked the way we did it. They liked the professionalism, they said, and they liked that we were family-friendly, and they wanted to meet with me, and we ended up meeting, and they wanted to do it. The concept of wrestling before and wrestling after, that was my idea.
Oh, okay.
You know, that was something I came up with. I have a couple good ideas every once in a while. I was one of them. And that's the way I wanted to do it, and they were all game for it. And I think they had said that, they told me at the time that in the month of August, this was the highest bought ticket total in the month of August. So, wow. And it was funny because I know we have a mutual friend, and he had told me, like, no, they did a pack the blue and it was crowded, but they had a lot of comp tickets, they said.
Yeah.
And so I ended up finding out later that this was the most bought tickets for the month of August. So that's kind of, kudos to Kevin Huntsberger, I guess.
Well, what gave you the idea? Because, you know, you brought up the match that I had against Roger, and that was a year prior to this. And then we kind of went back to, you know, Kevin ring announcing. And I remember, though, you coming up with this idea. This match, keep in mind, happens in late August. And you and I talked about this match in, like, March or April of this year, of 2019, of doing it. So what gave you the idea, or why did you think that this would be the direction to go? Because I don't even know if Jay and Tony were the tag team champions at that point when you first pitched the idea to me.
Can we just talk about how amazing those arm drags were?
Those were some pretty good arm drags.
Yeah, so now we're going to tag in the high-flying Ricky Steamboat over here.
This is, you know, I have not gone back and watched this since it happened, so this is going to be brutal.
Oh, look at this.
Because I hate watching myself. At least my knees didn't buckle like that indie kid not too very long ago, huh?
Yes. I can't believe you sold your penis. I look at you, no-selling that. Yeah, you just no-sell Tony.
Look at that arm drag.
God.
Or hip toss. Oh, God.
Best body slam since Hogan. but no, so the whole reason of doing this was, when I knew, and I'd kind of made a post, I had kind of felt like my company had, when I started it, you know, Axe was somebody I really leaned on, and he had kept telling me, you know, Hatton, you got to be the main guy. And so, look at that forearm in the corner.
Oh, God. This is brutal. This is so bad.
Oh, it's not that bad. It could be worse.
Oh, God.
It could be, and I won't say it. But anyway, no, so I knew that I'll cut it short, but I knew I wanted that the Iron Man with Tony was kind of my last hoorah as the main guy, the main focus guy, the heavyweight champ guy. Like, I knew that that was going to be my last hoorah. And so I kind of felt like I was like, God, there's a lot of people there.
There were a lot of people there.
I didn't realize that. I had kind of, I knew. And so I really wanted to have the Iron Man. And something I always kind of wanted to do. And I booked it with Tony. Well, to be honest, what had happened was after the Iron Man, my plan was, look at this kid checking on me. He's nicer than you are. but I didn't have a plan for after me and Tony. My plan was honestly for me to, for Red Daniels to be a heel and for me to kind of feud with him and just keep putting him over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once the pop happened and Dan got over and was drawing really well as a babyface, and like I kind of like I knew that God, Brandon told us so good.
Yeah. Brandon told the referee here. Very good, very good. We see him on Impact every week too.
Yeah, so talented. So he knows where everything at the right time. But sorry about that. I get sidetracked. but anyway, I think we had done a podcast and we had talked about, you know, and we had talked about you not, you know, how me and you wanted to be the one against Mike and how I wanted to be the one to help you with Mike Masters. And then it kind of, you know, we would always joke about being tag team partners and stuff like that. And so I knew we were going to be doing Battle Bowl and I was booking out, and this was about April, and I had realized this whole thing, we had the Pinkyville show coming up, and I knew those punches of Spade didn't look bad. but I knew that I'm a terrible camera guy, but I knew, sorry, I'm having trouble focusing, I'm just watching this amazing sell job, but watching you get your ass beat is just kind of everything I needed.
It's therapeutic. I just didn't know it. Morning.
but I knew I wanted to do something with you. And so we had the Pinckneyville show planned, in which I knew that was the show I was putting Red over. And then I knew that we were doing Battle Bowl, and I knew that how I was going in that direction. And then I knew everything else that I had planned. God, Kevin, no selling everything. So a situation like that, you kids that are looking. So Kevin just did the hot tag. He should have crawled over slowly, but he ran over and was no selled the amount of heat that was put on him.
I notice that when I'm in there, I feel like everything is hurried, and you've said it before, you have to slow things down, and I totally agree that, yes, we had time, and
when I had you pull his feet out, my initial, I sometimes forget that you're not a trained wrestler, and so, which is not a bad thing. But so that situation, how it should have went, so your future match when you put me over, you should have crawled after the hot tag and tagged and then rolled out to the side and then been on the outside so the fans didn't see you.
Gotcha.
And you're down and then his feet drop and then you automatically. So like now you should be laying on the ground still.
Gotcha.
Because we're doing all this boom, 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 back and forth. and you shouldn't be able to be there to help me. Because there's two guys in, so you should come in.
Makes sense.
Why the heck did I just do a jawbreaker? I haven't done one of those since 2010. Now here comes the man with the hot tag.
The funny thing to me is, what's that?
Those vicious clotheslines.
Our fans, I just, because I can remember, and I've said this 1,000 times before, you know, I hated the Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler stuff, and I did not want to get into that. Look at this. Look at this.
I know. God, John Cena. How'd he get out? Oh, come on, Brandon.
So, yeah, the fans, our fans, you know, were very accepting of all of this, too, at least to me. I didn't get any pushback or any hate from anybody backstage or any of the fans, which to me was pretty incredible. Throw my shoulder out of joint
there. Well, I mean, the thing is you're so well known for wrestling and what you do for wrestling, and gosh, Vadis, he moves so well. he does. Look at that rock bottom.
Beautiful.
Oh my gosh. So no, there was no, I knew the fans were going to be for it. And, so I kind of felt like it was perfect. I felt like you did a great job, what you needed to do. There's just things that, like you said, like I was going to ask you about that when this is over and I'll wait. Cause okay. I'm doing such a terrible job of, I'm just watching because I haven't seen this either. And so,
I love that Shane gets so much air with those choke slams.
So how did you feel knowing you had to do this superplex?
I was scared to death because you had told me, you know, you kind of let me know in advance what we were going to do. And this had me stressed out. And I was not sure how that was going to go. And actually, I wasn't terrible.
No, it wasn't terrible.
But yeah, you know, and again, this is a Thursday night. School is back in session. And look, there's a bunch of kids. I mean, it just, the support that night was incredible, I thought, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't realize. I said, I haven't seen this in so long, and I don't ever get to just enjoy the crowds or enjoy what's going on the night of because, you know, one, I'm dealing with the minors, and right. Then that night we got to do the whole, you know, where all the wrestlers were on the Jumbotron, and they were doing all the, like, they made the whole night about Stride.
Right.
And so, I was so busy the whole night. I didn't really realize. And then we were so far away where our dressing room was.
Right. Yes.
And so I just,
there's the delay.
Kevin almost, it's a moment Kevin screwed up, got stuck on the apron.
I love this finish though. This was clever.
I wonder who came up with it. There it is.
And you know, that was the cool part was that, you know, my friend Chad, or our friend Chad, who has come in before, he flew in for this. I had old acquaintances and friends from WSIL that came and watched. My parents came down from St. Louis to watch. So it was cool. It was a very cool night, and you know, and I don't ever tell anybody how a match is going to end. So this was a surprise. Our friend group, none of them are real big wrestling fans, but they came out to watch and support. So it was a fun night.
Yeah, it was. So now I can kind of, you know, talk without. I can't watch wrestling and but no. So to go back to what I was saying a few minutes ago, The plan was I knew I wanted to do something to be in you. We'd always joked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I knew that I was putting the belts on Spade and Tony. And so I knew that that was the direction we were going. And then I really enjoy working with Tony and wrestling with Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have like really good chemistry. We think the same. And so I knew that they were going to win the tag titles. I didn't have anything for me. I had booked everybody else. I had booked what everybody else was going to be doing. And I didn't book for myself. And so we had, maybe we were snapping and we were talking and I was thinking, and I knew that I was teaming with Scott Phoenix and that we were doing an angle for Battle Bowl. And so anyway, I was like, what if we did where Kevin came in and I had this, you know, this idea, and I thought, oh my God, it'll be so good. And it actually was perfect. It was great. It went the way that I, you know, and then it actually, you know, had to go longer because you had to come make a surprise at the resurrection show. But, but no, I mean, I, you know, it was exactly, you know, what I wanted to do. You know, I don't think I'm a great wrestler, but I knew that I was good enough to carry you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And help you get through it. And, you know, like I said, I had bad taste in my mouth with the mic thing. And then as I was putting the match together with you and Roger, I was kind of jealous that it wasn't me doing all these things to you. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Right, right.
But I know, you know, and I don't toot my own horn, but all those teacher matches and all that, I put all that together.
Right.
And I know I can make it look good, but I know if I was doing it, because it's my vision. Right. So I know if I'm doing it, and I always thought, okay, if I wrestle Kevin, you know, I can really get him over. But the only problem is that I can't wrestle him at Stride because everybody knows that we're friends.
Right.
And everybody knows. So I couldn't turn heel and I couldn't do it. And so unless we did an angle like where we said Lisa left you for me or something, and then she may not want that. So, but anyway, you know, the whole reason behind it was I wanted to do something where you actually got to wrestle, where you actually got to be in a story that went on, and you got to actually, you know, go and wrestle and hit moves and have moves done to you.
Right.
And so I kind of felt like the whole thing was great. You know, that was a, you know, like I couldn't believe the crowd when I went back and watched it because I hadn't seen it. And, but so as you wrestling, what do you think when you're out there? Like, cause I didn't know you were terrified to do the superplex. I thought you were just, okay.
No, I, so, you know,
so what's going through your mind?
What is going through my mind is, and I don't know, for some reason, even though I felt the safest with the three of you guys in there, I was also probably the most nervous because I knew, I guess because when I did the match with Masters, I knew it was a one and done. And then of course the Roger match happens and I knew then, okay, one match and it's done, but I knew we were winning and that was going to mean more matches and more title defenses. And I guess there's, you know, because I want to be at least okay at what I'm doing if I'm doing it in front of a bunch of people. But I think that our fans in particular give me a pass because they know that I'm not a trained wrestler. And, you know, I shouldn't be, you know, looking like I'm in there with Heath Hatton or Jay Spade or Tony Flood. And so I get a pass. But anything that where I'm off the mat makes me nervous because, you know, the biggest thing is I didn't want to hurt anyone. I didn't want to hurt Tony with that superplex and land wrong or do something. And, you know, cause we've seen it before where, you know, I kind of joked about that indie guy that jumped off the ropes and broke his knees or whatever, you know? So those little things kind of sit in the back of my head, but for some reason that night I was just really, really nervous. And I don't know if it was because I had so many friends there that were watching and looking forward to it. And, you know, I just didn't want to let anyone down. And then I can remember that first defense back at the building in Carterville. And I could not, because we went over that match literally right before we went out there, you know, with the championship win, you had sent me exactly what we were going to do, or not totally exactly, but, you know, I had an idea and I could kind of rehearse it in my mind for a few days beforehand. But that night we went out there for the first time and I can remember you were like, do a suplex, do a clothesline or whatever, you know, so you were kind of coaching me from the sidelines and it looked natural. You know what I mean? It didn't seem like you were, even though that you were, we were kind of cheating with the direction of what to do, but it just, you know, I don't know. It just, part of it not being a fully trained guy. And, but the thing that I've liked about any match that I've had is you've always put me in there with guys that I know are not going to hurt me or, you know, they're going to do everything they can to keep all of us safe and make up for my deficiencies. So that I've always appreciated as well.
Well, like I said, it was fun. It was the crowd really enjoyed it. And, you know what was funny though, is when we went to Centralia,
yeah,
and wrestled, and the crowd didn't know you, I don't think.
Yeah.
And so, like, I can remember being on the side, and somebody said, like, is this guy a real wrestler? And I remember laughing because, you know, because originally it was supposed to be in Mount Vernon.
Right.
And so when I started booking all this, you know, I knew, and they were going to be in Mount Vernon, but it got moved to Centralia. And so they didn't really know you.
Yeah.
And so we came out to... what was it, A Whole New World or something?
Yeah.
But we came out and they were all just kind of looking. And then a couple of the guys on the other side forgot spots and got wonky. And so I will say that was probably, in our title run, was probably the worst match. And it wasn't really your fault, but it was one, we weren't over, either one of us. And then the other guys forgot spots and didn't know what to do. I think it was Galloway kind of forgot a couple spots. And then, so I will say in our run, we only had one unpassable match. And luckily, I don't think there's any footage of it. So
no, I don't think there is. I think you're right about that. Well, this was fun. I enjoyed that watch along and, we will obviously come back next month with hopefully some updates with Stride and some more information for you guys. But Tyler, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up this week's episode?
No, that's about it.
All right. Well, Tyler, thanks for being a part of this week's show. Friends, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to leave a review. And you still have about, if you're listening to this on Monday, you have about 6 days left to donate to the My123Cents Stride Pro Wrestling Wrestling Figure Drive. Reach out to me through social media. I'm doing some pickups and deliveries this week. So let me know where you live, and I will be sure to swing by and get your donation. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and have a great week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.